Greetings to all of God's people. Today we are in lesson 168. This is Mordecai Joseph again. And in the last lesson, we were discussing the book of Obadiah, which is only one chapter. And there he devotes his entire prophecy to Edom, to the destruction that will come upon Edom, the qualities of Edom, and the end time events, where we shall see the children of Israel, both of the house of Judah and Joseph, involved in the, in essence, the destruction of Edom. As we read in verse 18, the house of Jacob shall be fire, speaking about all of Israel, and the house of Joseph, a flame. So the entirety of the house of Israel is going to be involved in the destruction of Esau, brother Esau, unfortunately, of all things. And this would be, in essence, the end of this rivalry between Jacob and Esau. Now, obviously, the destruction is physical. It's not spiritual. Just like it was in time past, where many times Jacob had to go to war against Esau, and oftentimes they would decimate Esau in certain areas. Not that they did all of them. And here again, in the elements of Esau, you might say, that are engage in active defiance of Jacob, of affliction of Jacob, and they will one more time bring destruction on Jacob prior to that, and therefore God is going to turn it around, where he's going to use Joseph and Israel, the rest of all of Israel and Judah, and wherever Edom is linked to them, and wherever location they are, they're going to have to deal with them. So in essence, God is the one orchestrating all that, and we cannot hold it personally against anyone. And ultimately, God will bring also salvation to Esau. And unfortunately, most of them are going to be in the second resurrection, and very few will be delivered in the first resurrection, because obviously some of them have repented and have become a part of the people of God. And few are left behind from the final destruction, mainly widows and orphans, maybe a few men. And then God will deliver them too, as we read that earlier. And so we read at the end time that the land of Israel, that Esau has been claiming all this time, and Amalek, which is a part of Esau, and others with them, that they belong, those lands belong to them. God says, oh no, I am the one that determines to whom the land belongs, and that's the way it's going to be. And that's in essence what the final time scenario is going to be. And so he's describing the second half of this chapter, of this prophecy of Obadiah, that Jacob, the house of Jacob, shall possess their possessions in verse 17. Verse 19, the south. In verse 18 he says, the house of Jacob shall be a fire, and the house of Joseph a flame, as we read it earlier. But the house of Esau shall be stubble. In other words, they're not going to be much of a match, in essence, for Joseph or the whole entirety of the house of Israel, since God is going to be with them. And so they shall kindle them and devour them. See? So God is going to use Jacob, who just been afflicted and even taken into captivity in different places by Esau, among others. And he's going to turn it around, where now Jacob will rise up again and turn the table upside down, you know, on Esau, brother Esau. And so they're going to devour them, and no survivor shall remain of the house of Esau, for the Lord has spoken. Now this is something that has been written 526, probably 2700 years ago. Now, that's the way God saw the end of Esau in this lifetime. No survivor. Now when he says no survivor, he's speaking about the men mostly, because you know some orphans are going to be left behind and widows, and also some men. But you know, generally speaking, he says that their armies, you see, the ones that have been used to destroy Jacob are going to be totally annihilated and destroyed. And as a result, the south shall possess the mountains of Esau. You know, those tribes that will be in the south will possess the territory of Esau. And that's basically below the Dead Sea and all the way down to the Gulf of Aqaba, which is all in Jordan. So all that territory will be possessed by the tribes that will be in the south. And the configuration of the tribes, you can read in Ezekiel, the last two, three chapters of Ezekiel. And so they will possess that territory, and the lowland shall possess Philistia. In other words, those who are going to be in the center of the country, in the Sharon Valley, will possess the Gaza Strip. That's what Philistia is, the whole territory there. In other words, no more foreigners, no more Palestinians, no more squatters that claim to be the rightful owners of the land, and they claim that the land belongs to them. This is all basically remnants of Edom, of Amalek, of the Philistines, of the Canaanites. All of them are going to be gone. You see, and since I'm not willing to agree, you know, I'm not willing to submit to the will of God, the only language they understand is power. That's God, you know, what God is going to show them. And unfortunately, it's going to be the decimation in this lifetime of all these peoples. You know, few of them will be left behind and will be absorbed into the house of Israel. You can read in different places where God says in Ezekiel, you read the same. When they divide the land, he said, them are the strangers that are among you who are willing to follow the Lord God and worship him, you know, not cling to their own false religions. He said, you give them land too, that they would may dwell among you. So this basically will be brothers of Jacob, of Edom, of Amalek, you know, today called Palestinians. And so the lowland is going to possess the territory of the Gaza Strip and the fields of Samaria, today the West Bank. You know, they're going to declare, just about ready to declare a Palestinian state there. And they don't realize all that is going to go back to brother Jacob. And since they're going to oppose God, God will just deal with them in the only way that they should be dealt with. And in essence, it's going to be the death warrant. What they're signing is assigned the papers for the Palestinian state. And so he says the fields of Samaria also will be taken by those tribes that will be in that area, and Benjamin shall possess Gilead, which is on the east bank. All that was Israeli territory, lands of Israel. Not going to be any negotiations over land or land for peace. All these people, just like the former Canaanites, will be, as Moses said, decimated so that nothing is going to be left there that still breathes. And the captives, he says, of the host of the children of Israel, so they're going to be in a state of captivity right prior to this event, the coming of the Redeemer of Israel. And so these captives, well, obviously are not captives now, they've been freed by the God of Israel. The captives of the host of the children of Israel shall possess the land of Canaan, the Canaanites, all of it, as far as Sarfat. Sarfat is way up there in Lebanon. And by the way, the people of Israel that were captives in that area in the first captivity, they gave this name, Sarfat, to modern-day France. You know, in Hebrew, the name for France is Sarfat. And they're the ones that gave the name to that territory as they migrated further down the road later on into areas in Europe. And the captives of Jerusalem who are in Sfarad. And I mentioned that Sfarad last lesson. The captives of Jerusalem who were in Sfarad in the first captivity and also now in the coming captivity, but especially in the first captivity as they migrated further down the road later on, you know, up and then down into Europe, into an area which they called also Sfarad, or, as it is known by others, Spain. You see, and that gives you a link there and a clue to the whereabouts of also Edom, part of Edom, that also migrated in that direction. But the children of Israel have been known to be in that area of Sfarad long before there was a Spain, as we know it today. Which to begin with was not an ancient country, but later on became known as Spain in the days of Rome, and prior to that when the captives of Jerusalem went in that direction. And so that's where this community that is known in the Jewish community, you know, the Sephardic community, that is the Jews of Spain, later on after the Inquisition, being persecuted by Brother Esau, went to many other countries. And to this very day, they are called the Sephardic people. I happen to be one of them. But anyway, these captives of Jerusalem were in Sfarad, that means where, shall possess the cities of the south. And then he said, saviors shall come to Mount Zion, You see, deliverers, saviors from the children of Israel are going to be saints or going to be spirit beings. They are going to come to Mount Zion and they are going to judge the mountains of Esau, the nations of Esau, the peoples of Esau, the 14 dukes of Esau that became nations and the splinters among them. In other words, are going to be judging them in terms of punishment and many other ways. And the kingdom shall be the Lord's. You see? The kingdom is not going to be Esau's or Edom or Babylon, but it's going to be the Lord's and his people, Israel, Jacob. And so that's what Obadiah tells us. And you link it with other prophecies, you begin to see a greater picture there. And most people, unfortunately, have not been able to put it together because they totally missed the boat about the identity of Esau, and also the fact that they thought that the issue in the Middle East was basically an Isaac-Ishmael conflict. And so they were not able to put these prophecies together and have a proper understanding and really understand world prophecy in the proper way and end-time events. They do not know how where to place Babylon properly. They do not know where to place Edom properly. Even though the prophecies make it very plain what is really happening here. The beginning of the power of the blessing that was given to both Isaac and, that is, to Jacob and Esau, made it very plain that the fate of these twin brothers will be linked all the time. And wherever Jacob is, there will Esau also be. And history makes it also very plain. That's exactly what happened. We'll come back to this again, you know, in the section of history, where we shall trace the identity of Esau and where he went. As it is, I already made a few clues, you know, gave you a few clues here, but I will not elaborate at this point. Anyway, let's go to the book of Joel, that is also going to deal with this period of time, and the history of Israel, and the history of Judah, their fate. And so let's go to the book of Joel, chapter 3, where the fate of Judah in specific here is mentioned, and also Israel, as we shall see later on. And so we read something very specific here, which already came to pass in our own lifetime. That is, for those of us who were born at that time. We read in chapter 3 and verse 1, "For behold, in those days, and at that time," see, that's a terminology about the end time, "in those days and at that time, when I bring back," you see, "when I bring back the captives of Judah and Jerusalem," he brought them already once, 70 years after the first captivity, in the days of Ezra and Nehemiah and Mordecai and, you know, others. You see, that was the first captivity, he already brought them back the first time. But this is again, he's going to bring them back again. In other words, this is the second time. But speaking about the end time, in those days and at that time, when I bring back the captives of Judah and Jerusalem, which he did, he's the one that brought them back. Some people think, you know, and especially in the past, even some among us used to think that, you know, that those Jews, you know, did it on their own. And they went over there and established a state. And God made it very plain many places, beginning with the prophecies of Jacob that he gave them toward the end time, you know, when he told his sons, "Come, I'll tell you what's going to happen to you at the end time." And he described the state of Judah at the time. He's going to be like a lion in the heck of his enemies. You see, Judah was not doing that in the past 2,000 years while in exile. He was prophesying about the end time. So obviously the only way he can do it is if he's in his own land. And all the enemies around him, you know, they feel that Judah is a lion, you know, and he's got them by the neck. And some people have forgot that, and so they began to accuse the Jews of doing their own thing and giving the land, you know, the name of Israel, and they had no business doing it, you know, and so forth. And all that a matter of ignorance and hypocrisy, unfortunately, on the part of some. Some of them were in our midst. No, God is the one that does it. He says, "I will bring them back, the captives of Judah and Jerusalem," just like in the first captivity. He was bringing them back for a purpose. And the purpose was ultimately his own coming in the flesh. He can't come to Jerusalem and all those places when nobody's around. And he cannot come the second time to Jerusalem either when nobody's around, you see. He's the one that brought them back. Now, they don't behave themselves as they should. That's one thing. They didn't the first one either. But he's the one that brought them back. And so he said, I will also, right after that in essence, as he brings them back and establishes them, you know, in that land, and obviously protected them all this time and all their wars, and they generally were victorious with the last one of Lebanon. You know, just like America, you know, Joseph had the Vietnam, they had their Lebanon, and they had to flee Lebanon just like, you know, Joseph had to flee Vietnam, shamefully. And that's again because of they had no business to be there to begin with, just like a man. Joseph had no business being there in Vietnam, and also God was not with them. That's the main thing. And so here he says, as I bring them back also, you know, another event right after that, I will also gather all nations and bring them down to the valley of Jehoshaphat. Jehoshaphat means God the judge. And I was around Jerusalem. And I will enter into judgment with them there. And you know what the judgment of God is. Destruction. That's how he judges people who are opposing to him. So there are two types of judgment, you know, that God deals with humanity. If they're opposing him, evil doers, you know, judgment means destruction. And if they are righteous, the judgment means, you know, in righteousness, manages their affairs, helps them, you know, live in peace. And so he said, I will enter into judgment with them there on account of my people. See, they are his people, my heritage, Israel, whom they have scattered among the nations. And here he's speaking not only about Judah in specific, but also all the rest of the tribes of Israel, the nations of Israel, the peoples of Israel. And by the way, a lot of them are going to be in the Middle East. That's including Joseph, as it is. You find a lot of them, not many, many thousands of them, involved with the Persian Gulf ongoing crisis, which is again going to erupt one more time in a great way. And unfortunately, initially, it's not going to be good for Joseph. Because in Isaiah 11, as we shall come back to it, you can read there that Joseph is found there in a state of captivity, including Judah, in several areas there, including Iran and Iraq and other places. And from there, God is going to deliver them and turn them loose on the children of Esau, and they're going to bring destruction on them and others. And so here we read, he's going to enter into judgment with the nations because they've scattered his people. And they have also divided up my land. I mean, to this very moment, they are still engaged in doing it. And unfortunately, some of the fools among Judah are cooperating, who have no knowledge of God and his word and no respect, but have contempt. And so God also allows that because of their foolishness and wickedness, that thing to happen, where they have already given so much of the land back. God gave it to them. They haven't appreciated that God gave it to them through those wars and victories, especially the 67. And prior to that, you know, 48, when instead of appreciating what God had given them and living righteously, they lived, many of them, not all of them, wickedly, and so God is taking it away from them. But he's, you know, he's accusing the nations for dividing up my land, because not only the local natives are involved in that division, but many nations all around the earth are forcing them and putting pressure on them to do it. And so he said, they've divided up my land. It's my land, you know. People forgot that, whose land it is. It's not just, you know, as I call it, you know, Arab land or Jewish land. It's God's land. God takes it personally. And they have cast lots for my people and have given a boy as a payment for a harlot. You know what that means? When they take people of Judah into captivity and people of Israel, they're going to use them for, just like they did in the Second World War. And they're going to use boys for sexual gratification for the sick, you know, the sick people among the soldiers. And so that's a punishment that Israel is going to go through. And so he said, they've given a boy as a payment for a harlot and sold a girl for wine that they may drink. You know, once the enemy soldiers take over the land, that's exactly what they're going to do to the people of Israel. Not only in Judah, but elsewhere too. And unfortunately, that's been always a parcel of any war.
In verse 4, indeed, what have you to do with me, O Tyre and Sidon and all the coast of Philistia? Now, who are the people who are the inhabitants of these territories? Tyre and Sidon, you're talking about Lebanon. And Philistia. There you find the Palestinians. You see? Children of Edom. Children of Amalek. Children of Esau. They moved not only here, but long time ago, many of the Edomites, because they were persecuted by the armies of David, you know, his chief of staff, Joab, they fled. We have historic records. They fled into Tyre and Sidon, Lebanon. And they were a minority, and then gradually they took over. They were men of the sword, and also pretty smart. You know, they were not stupid people. In many ways, have a lot of intelligence, just like Jacob. And they generally rise to the top, and they're the elite wherever they go, just like Jacob has been many places throughout his history. And also went to the Philistines, who were the enemies of Israel, and also they became their friends, obviously. You know, your enemy is my enemy. And so we become friends. And so they moved over there, and so you find among the Philistines there also Edomites that integrated with them, obviously. And as you go into the Gaza Strip today, if you just travel through and look at the people, you notice the differences there. The Hamitic race is there, darker race. And there are people that look like Europeans. And others in between, you see. A lot of Edomites, and many of them, you know, look just like Jews. You would know the difference, especially the Middle Eastern Jews. And others may look even like European Jews. You can see over there people who have blue eyes and blonde hair. Not many, but the several, or red hair, just like many of the Jews. You know, these are Edomites, children of Israel, that is, the children of Isaac, of Abraham, relatives, members of the family, and yet in opposition to God. And he said, what have I to do with you, O Tyre and Sidon, and all the coasts of Philistia? You know, today the Gaza Strip. There are over a million of them there, and they're full of hatred, you know, boiling hatred against Judah and against the people of Israel, wherever they are. You know, they all hate Americans in one way, sort of a love-hate relationship. They want what America has to offer, but they hate them because the policies are generally pro-Israel, and they don't realize they're brothers. And so he says, this is God speaking, will you retaliate against me? You see, he takes it personally. Because they're going to retaliate when the victory is given to them for all that, you know, from their point of view, all the evils that the people of Judah have done to them. Taking their land, you know, oppressing them all this time, humiliating them. They're going to retaliate. You know, it's going to be a bloody massacre there for the many Jews. And so he said, well, you retaliate against me, but if you retaliate against me swiftly and speedily, I will return your retaliation upon your own head. You see, God is going to repay them. First, he's going to allow them, you know, as a whipping boy, to spank his people Judah, drive them to him. But then again, because of the deep hatred that has been there for ages, he's going to smack them too. Verse 5, because you have taken my silver and my gold, you know, everything they rob, you know, the fellow Jews, the brothers, which they don't look upon them as such, but as, you know, despicable enemies. He said, anything you take from them, he said, this is mine. You take my silver and my gold. Whatever possessions you take from them, God says, this is mine. You know, this is personal here. And you have carried into your temples, you know, your mosques, you know, in today's terminology, my prized possessions. And also the people of Judah and the people of Jerusalem. You have sold to the Greeks. And people don't know, you know, what the Greeks are, you know. Are they going to sell them all the way to the present-day Greece? It's not what he's talking about. You see, when you study history, you realize that the Greek world was all over the place. You see, a lot of Greeks occupied areas of Syria, occupied areas of Lebanon, occupied the land of Israel, you know, and to this very day. Among the Palestinians also you find Greeks. And when you go to Jerusalem, the old quarters of Jerusalem, you find one whole quarter is a Greek quarter. They all speak Arabic, you know, you think they're Arabs, but they're not. They're all Greeks. And so that's what he's talking about. You know, the local Greeks. He's not talking about the Greeks in Greece. But even the people of Greece, you know, they seem to be more pro-Arab and have been, you know, for a long time than pro-Israel or pro-Jews. But merely speaking about the local Greeks in Lebanon, in Syria, and in the land itself. So he said, you've sold the people of Judah and people of Jerusalem, you've sold to the Greeks. Now in Jerusalem, you know, it's in the cellar to the local Greeks, because they're right there, you know, the Greek quarters in Jerusalem. And they're, you know, they're Greek Orthodox. And you can imagine, you know, the abundance of hatred that is going to be whipped up, you know, at the end of time against against the Jews. And so you're going to see a much more violent temper there, you know, taking over many people in the area. And all that works out into that configuration. So he said, you have sold the people of Judah and Jerusalem to the Greeks, that you may remove them far from their borders. You see, so they sell them to the Palestinians way up there, where many of them are Greeks, or people of Lebanon, where many of them are Greeks, really. And also there are a lot of Edomites there. You know, it's a mixture of people, and all the same, even though they all may be known as either Arabs or Lebanese. The Lebanese don't like to be called Arabs, because they're not, because many of them are Greeks, that's why. And they're Greek Orthodox, generally speaking, in religion. And you see the hatred that is among many people in Lebanon against Israel. And so you can see that happening. And that's what he's talking about here. So he said, verse 7, behold, I will raise them out of the place to which you have sold them. See, God is going to deliver them wherever they are. You see, and he's going to use them to destroy the very people that have taken them captive. And when God is with them, even though they may be sickly and weakly and all that, you know, he's going to make them powerful people. That's the nature of God. You know, through our weakness, we become strong. That's how he deals with us, and so he's going to make his people strong, who are now were taken to captivity in whatever condition they are. He's going to make them strong, and he's going to, as he said, and I will return your retaliation upon your own head. I will sell your sons and your daughters into the hand of the people of Judah, and they shall sell them to the Sabaeans. Sabaeans, now people are in the east today. You might find them in modern terminology in Iran and part of Iraq there. And so he says, they're going to sell them to the Sabaeans, to a people far off, for the Lord has spoken. And mainly speaking here, generally, about people of Edom. That's the main player, and others are involved. And so he says, in verse 9, proclaim this among the nations, prepare for war. And he's bringing all the nations of the earth. Wake up the mighty man, let all the men of war draw near, let them come up, you know, rearmament, global rearmament again. Beat your plowshares into swords, and your pruning hooks into spears, instead of spending time on their money, you know, resources and human resources on their own social needs and agrarian needs, you know, that they use it for weapons. So that's exactly what he's talking about here, and we're going to see that. As it is, you know, it's happening all around the world. Let the weak say, I'm strong. And nowadays, you know, a terrorist can have a nuclear bomb. He can be strong. And he says, assemble and come, all you nations, and gather together all around. Cause your mighty ones to go down there, O Lord. In other words, they're going to all come against the people of God. Verse 12. And then when you read Revelation, you see all that is working together. And then, you know, in Revelation, it brings makes it very clear, you know, the link of Edom, of Babylon, physical Babylon, spiritual Babylon, and all those things are working together. And if you don't know the identity of Edom, you don't understand this whole scenario of Revelation and all the prophecies that involve Babylon, involve the end time, involve the captivity and the war that will happen and come upon the people of Israel. You see, we have to have all these pieces of the puzzle together to have a proper understanding, and many people don't. They got mixed up in modern times. Some people thought, well, you know, the Edomites are Turkey. You know, they went into Turkey. Yeah, probably there might be some, obviously, some Edomites there, because they're all over the Middle East and the Mediterranean nations. But the people of Turkey have nothing to do with the people of Edom. They're Central Asian people. They came from Turkestan. Totally different people. And as it is, you go to Turkey, you find Armenians, a lot of Armenians there, and a lot of Mediterranean nations, and then the Turks that came from central Turkey. And the Turks never did in the past, never do today, ever claim that the land is theirs. You see, they never lay claim to that land. As a matter of fact, they're the ones that have had the best relationship, generally speaking, as a Muslim people, with the Jews. When the Jews were expelled from Spain, the Sultan of Turkey invited them, you know, to come in and live in peace in Turkey, and they've been there ever since. They were protected from Nazi Germany in the Second World War by the Turks. They were friendly to them, and still friendly, you know, they're still, you know, they have a very, very close relationship, even alliance, you know, military alliances and economic and all that with Israel. That's not at all in that category of Edom. And a lot of people are in the, you know, misinformation, totally misunderstood that, and they said, aha, this is it. Otiman, you know, Ottoman Empire. It has nothing to do with Timan. Osman, that's the name, you know, in the Mediterranean language. It's not Timan, it's Osman, you know, something you cannot even pronounce if you don't speak Mediterranean languages. That's what they were. And somebody thought, well, it says Timan. Timan is the son of Edom. Oh, Timan, ah, that's a link. That's misinformation. You know, that's shallow, superficial knowledge of the Bible. And the Spirit of God doesn't lead us to believe, to understand the Bible in this manner. We will into to our own understanding. That's how we come up with these kind of things. And so, God said here, basically speaking to the people of Edom and all the others that will come against Israel. Assemble and come, all of you nations, and gather together all around. Cause your mighty ones to go down there. O Lord, that's what the prophet says. And to God, now you come down too, you know, and deal with them. Verse 11 and verse 12, let the nations be wakened, that is, wakened, and come up to the valley of Jehoshaphat. You know, wake up, you know, come over here, you know. In other words, God says, you come over here, and I'll show you who's boss. That's in essence what you see here, you know, in modern terminology. For there, he said, I will sit to judge all the surrounding nations, and specifically in the nations around Israel today, that is modern Israel, Judah. He's going to judge them. And also all the nations that will come and help them, and that's also part of the reason why Babylon is involved in this whole matter, because Edom, physically speaking, moved into the territory of Babylon anciently and also into the later on territory of Edom, that is territory of Babylon, spiritual Babylon, known as Rome, and that's the reason why the Jews in ancient times, in Second Temple time, understanding that also, some of the links there, having more knowledge of prophecy and history of the time, they used to call Rome Edom. And it's not without a reason. As it is, they had a king ruling over there who was an Edomite, Herod the Great, who had a very close relationship with Rome also. Now that all Romans, you know, all people of Italy are Edomites, they're not. But there are elements of Edom that have been there for a long, long time. And so he says, let the nations be wakened and come up to the valley of Jehoshaphat, for I will sit to judge all the surrounding nations. Put in the sickle, for the harvest is ripe. Come, go down, for the winepress is full. And that's what you read also in, as we read earlier in Isaiah 63. I hope, you know, chapters then God is going to bring upon Edom. And there are many prophecies. Moses spoke about that. When God comes down to judge the earth, he's coming from Edom, from the fields of Edom. And several people have mentioned that, several prophets. And if you don't understand that, you know, what God is talking about, you would not comprehend that. And so notice the terminology here. For I will sit to judge all the surrounding nations, put in the sickle, for the harvest is ripe. Now you go to Revelation, you see the same terminology. Revelation 14:15. Then you go to Jeremiah 51, and you read the same terminology, and there he's talking about Babylon. You see, the Babylon of the days of Jeremiah, and Edomites were already there in great number. I see the link between these two. So that's what he's saying here, you know, put in the sickle, for the harvest is ripe. Come, go down, for the winepress is full, the vats overflow. For their wickedness is great. And this is, as I said, mentioned in Isaiah 63, where it's specifically talking about Edom. But when you understand the entirety of the story, you see the link between Edom and Babylon, physical Babylon, ancient Babylon, modern Babylon, and why those armies are also coming against God, against his, you know, the anointed of Israel and the people of Israel. All these things are linked together. This is verse 14, multitudes, multitudes in the valley of decision. For the day of the Lord is near in the valley of decision. So it's speaking about the end time, totally the end time, the coming of Christ. And then here we read here, verse 15, the sun and moon will grow dark, and the stars will diminish their brightness. And then in verse 16 we read, the Lord also will roar from Zion and utter his voice from Jerusalem, because he's coming down on the Mount of Olives. And the heavens and the earth will shake, but the Lord will be a shelter for his people and the strength of the children of Israel. You know, it goes to Zechariah 14. You read more about that in Zechariah 12. And also Isaiah 51. And many other places. You know, it's at this end time that God is going to bring deliverance to Jacob, wherever Jacob is. And here in specific about Judah. And, you know, some of the children of Israel that are among them. And so, this is the timing. Verse 17, so you shall know that I am the Lord your God. So that's going to be also a witness to his own people. And unfortunately, many of them do not know their God as they should. And so it says, you will know that I am the Lord your God. And this is the one who that became the Redeemer of Israel, the Messiah, Jesus Christ. They don't know him now. He says, you're going to know me. I'm not just, you know, the Savior, the Messiah. I'm your very God, your Redeemer, the one that married you in Sinai. You see, that's what he's saying here. I am the one, your Lord, you know, the Lord your God, dwelling in Zion, my holy mountain. You know, the Arabs claim Jerusalem is ours. They know their holy mountain. He says, no, this is my holy mountain. So you can see how furious he is at those who claim that. And what he's going to do. And what spirit really is behind it. You know, what spirit ascended up to heaven trying to dethrone God to heaven in Jerusalem. That's the same spirit that wants to destroy Jerusalem on earth. And take it over. And reign over it. You see? And he's the one behind the spiritual Babylon and all the nations of the earth, and especially Edom. And he's been there from the day, you know, that he was in his mother's womb, influencing that kid before he was born, and throughout his lifetime to this very day, on and off. And so God says, this is my holy mountain, this is my city, this is my Zion. And then Jerusalem, he says, shall be holy. Now it's not, it's profane. Defiled, you know, by the iniquities that are in it, both of Judah and Israel, and all the nations of the earth, the Edomites, the Amalekites, you know, the Philistines, other nations. You've got all the religions of the face of the earth represented there. That's why God calls it Sodom and Gomorrah. And so he says, then Jerusalem shall be holy, and no foreigners, you see, or no Canaanites, as you read in Hebrew. No Canaanites, no Philistines, no Edomites, nobody else that doesn't belong there shall ever pass through here again. You see, like in days of old, and they constantly came and made war against Jerusalem. It's not going to happen anymore, he said. That's my holy mountain now, my residence. And it shall come to pass in that day, he says, that the mountains shall drip with new wine, the hills shall flow with milk, and all the brooks of Judah shall be flooded with water. So God is going to heal the land, going to make it paradise, heaven on earth. A fountain shall flow from the house of the Lord, and you read that in Ezekiel, and you read that in Revelation too. And water, the valley of Acacias, you know, so it's going to go one toward the Dead Sea, one toward the Mediterranean. And Egypt, in contrast, one of the nations that is rising against Judah and Israel, Egypt, nation of Ishmael today, shall be a desolation. So initially, they're going to have to destroy them. Not all of them, not totally. There's going to be a lot of destruction there because of their hatred against the people of Israel. And even though they made supposedly peace with them, it's a cold peace. There's a lot of hatred, you know, in Egypt against Judah. And that's what more, you know, the present president of Egypt was telling Arafat, don't compromise in Jerusalem, this is Arab land, and if you declare a state, you know, regardless of what Israel, the Israelis are saying, you know, I'm going to be with you. So God is going to show them what he thinks about it. Egypt shall be a desolation, and Edom a desolate wilderness. See? Now here you see Ishmael and Edom together in that confederacy with others, children of Lot, and the Philistines and others, against the people of God. So he says, Egypt shall be a desolation, Edom a desolate wilderness, even worse, you see. And there are many prophecies about the destruction that is coming upon Babylon. And the same terminology is used all along. And he says, this is going to be that way because of the violence against the people of Judah. So in the Middle East, that's what the problem is. And God is going to deal with both Ishmael and Edom, the brother of Jacob. Why? Because they have shed innocent blood in their land, in the land of Judah. Well, this is a Jewish land, so to speak. Land of Israel. Land of all the tribes of Israel. We're not there yet, but will be. But as long as Judah is there, that's his land too. You see? All the brothers, you know, are going on vacation or went somewhere else. You know, the brother who is left behind, you know, the whole land is his. As long as nobody else is around. But it's certainly not, you know, doesn't belong to the neighbors. You know, just because most of the brothers are not there and only one is there, the neighbors cannot say, well, this is our land now. That's in essence what is happening there. And God says he's going to bring destruction on Ishmael, in essence, Egypt, and other nations of Ishmael also are going to be in confederacy against Judah. And Edom, so he's using here the main players there, and Edom, a desolate wilderness, because of the violence against the people of Judah, for they've shed innocent blood. See, God is not accusing the Jews when they go to war against the Arabs of shedding innocent blood. He's accusing, you know, all those around them of shedding innocent blood because they have no business going to war against Judah because God brought them back, gave them that land. That land is his to begin with. And that's from the point of view of God, the way he sees it. A lot of people will try to be, you know, even-handed there and think, well, you know, you Jews have done a lot of things you have no business doing against all your neighbors around. You know, learn to live in peace, you know, give them back the land, you know, it belongs to them. Allow them to have a Palestinian state and so forth. And God says, no, that's innocent blood that they shed in the land of Judah. But Judah, in contrast, shall abide forever in Jerusalem from generation to generation. For I will acquit them of the guilt of bloodshed whom I have not acquitted. In other words, the Redeemer, the Savior of Israel, the one that died for them, he says, I'm going to forgive them their iniquities. Now, this is 2,800 years ago. He already said that he's going to do it, and some people say, well, all you Jews, in the past 2,000 years, you all go to hell. You see, you've rejected Christ. Well, Christ never rejected them. And to begin with, they serve the God of Israel, not knowing that he's also Christ. So they haven't rejected Christ totally. You see? When you think about it, that's the irony of it all. They go to the synagogue every Sabbath and they worship Christ. And now they talk about the Savior of Israel, the Redeemer of Israel. They worship him, they praise him, they honor him, they glorify him. And they're blind, on the other hand, about his identity as he came in the flesh. And so that's confusion there, on one hand. But then, when he comes back, they recognize him, you know, as the deliverer of Israel, the God of Israel, as the Redeemer of Israel, as the one that they expected to come as the Messiah to deliver them in their time of trouble. And so now their eyes will be totally open to know that the one that was their God and their husband is also their Messiah and their Redeemer and their Savior, the one that 2,000 years ago, you know, many of them have rejected. And so I said, I'm going to forgive them. They're going to be my people because it's... You read in other places, he's going to be their king and their husband. And you can read that in the book of Hosea, in chapter 1. First, he's speaking about the fact that he's going to bring back his people to the land at the end time, after the punishment he's going to bring upon them. And so we read in chapter 1, verse 11, and we read that earlier. We covered that in the history of the church of God, who and what is the church of God. In verse 11 of chapter 1 of Hosea, he says, then the children of Judah and the children of Israel shall be gathered together and appoint for themselves one head, and they shall come up out of the land of the north, that is, out of the land. And in other places, we read that it is the land of the north, and then in many other places, we read also that many of the children of Israel will be scattered in all the four corners of the earth, and they shall be coming from everywhere. And as we mentioned that earlier, some of the children of Israel never went to Europe, but went back east and remained in the territory. And then you go to chapter 2, and God makes it very plain in verse 16, "And it shall be in that day, says the Lord, that you shall call me my husband, and no longer call me my master," because God is going to take Israel back to himself as a wife. Anyway, I think we've covered enough in this lesson. We're going to continue in the next lesson. And this is again Mordecai Joseph saying greetings to all of God's people. Until next time.